Here's Higdon, it sits up nicely for Michael Higdon! And what a start for Motherwell! But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sutton! Magnificent Malt! Stephen Robinson celebrates! Motherwell, 2-1! Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr and Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight we'll look back on a very successful week for Motherwell. Progression in the Europa League, a fantastic 3-0 victory over Aberdeen at Pittodrie yesterday. We'll also look ahead to a busy week with a trip to Israel to play Hapoel Beersheva, a home fixture against Rangers on the Sunday. We'll discuss some incomings and outgoings at Fir Park, and we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Thanks for having me.
Evening.
Well, the reason for that and kind of delayed reaction from you guys was I didn't actually introduce you. So we've got someone that's actually been in the stands for some of the games this season, Ben Banks from Not the Old Firm website. We've also got Scott and Andy back as usual. Scott, I'll start with yourself and we'll start with the Coleraine game on Thursday night. A very commanding first half display. We looked completely in the driver's seat. There was no way that we could possibly let our Northern Irish part-time opponents back into the game. Yet, in true Motherwell fashion, we managed to find a way, conceding two penalties in the second half. And it must be said, Coleraine deservedly forced extra time. The extra time was cagey. I don't think either team really went full throttle if we were being honest in our assessment of that. And then it came down to the lottery of penalties where Trevor Carson was the hero, saving all three of Coleraine's penalties. We go through 3-0 on pens, a game that we should have won in the 90 minutes. But is the most important thing progression? And perhaps when we're going to talk about the Aberdeen game, we'll talk about the fact that there's many ways to win football matches. That wasn't the most stylish of ways to do it, but we got there.
I think obviously is the most important thing is on paper we win the game, but that's no kid on it. It was horrendous view in the second half. Thing with the issue was we get 2-0 half time and the players' heads, we've had that's us, win the game. It's Glenn Torn all over again. They're going to just sit back and try and stop it being a rout, and it was the exact opposite. The second half we didn't show up at all. But at the end of the day, we are through. So it was really just down to one really poor second half. The extra time was always going to be a lottery, wasn't it? With us particularly being down to 10 men, we done well with being 10 men. I think it was many years was it for we'd last won a, I can't remember off the top of my head, that we'd last won a penalty shootout. I mean, obviously the most recent one being St Mirren, and all the penalties were terrible, and it was a kind of polar opposite for that. So it's just a bit of a relief, and the draw has been particularly kind to us in relation to the Europa. If you look at what Rangers Aberdeen have got, we're really and we are shout at potentially making it to the group stages. Israel being probably the biggest test, and then we can concentrate on if we get there, the next team at Fir Park. But yeah, I think everybody's viewing was shocking. It really was. I mean, I was actually dreading us playing Aberdeen, but I think I said that a couple of weeks ago. It is a kind of Motherwell way that we'll scrape past a team, and when we don't expect to win, we're getting put a performance in like we did at Petardry, which we'll discuss later. But hopefully that carries on to Sunday for the game against Rangers.
Ben, I'm sure it was just as nervy for you sitting within the stadium as it was for us sitting at home, many of us behind the couch. The way that we contrived to almost lose the game, it was very much nearly defeat from the jaws of victory. Though we got through the celebrations after it, it looked very much like the Motherwell players were well aware of how close a scrape they had. And I suppose it's worth considering as well the fact that we were playing on a surface that really wasn't conducive to any sort of football. Stephen Robinson mentioned it in his post-match yesterday that maybe now we could mention the pitch and some controversial refereeing decisions. Because I think it's fair to say, despite the fact that it was a below-par performance, there were elements out with our control that were also far from acceptable.
Yeah, well, I was at the showgrounds the day before the game, and even us between the media that were talking in the sort of wee press box there were saying, like, this pitch tomorrow in terms of Coleraine. And I think a few of the Coleraine journalists that I was speaking to had said that as well, just wait until the second half, because I don't know if anybody noticed that they just kept kicking it towards that right-hand side. They basically explained that they've got a wee slope in that part where the park is extra sticky, so they basically just kick it down there and punt balls into the box, which is eventually what they did in the second half. It was, the full game for me was just completely chaotic, from the police escort I got into the ground to then the penalty shootouts at the end. It was just a crazy game. I think the first half was probably the most complete Mullow performance up until that point, probably up until the Aberdeen game. They start to finish in the 45 minutes, were completely dominant, and it was two bordering on four or five. What happened in that second half was beyond me. Coleraine, that early penalty, just seemed to completely throw Mullow, and then they've got Trevor Carson to thank in the end, because I think if perhaps Coleraine, maybe if it is a Hapoel Beersheba in similar circumstances, maybe extra time was a bit too far for Coleraine, because they just seemed, even with Mullow having 10 men, they just seemed to get a bit leggy. But Stephen Robinson said that after the game, it doesn't matter, nobody's really talking about how you won in a couple of days' time after the game. The main thing's progression. Doesn't matter if it's 4-0 or the way Mullow won it on penalties. They got there in the end, and it sets up two fairly decent ties in Europe, considering the ties Aberdeen Rangers have got.
Andy, it must have brought back glorious memories of that Coca-Cola Cup penalty shootout victory over Inverness back in 1997.
Did we not win one after that? Did we not beat Raith Rovers?
Did that? I thought that finished 3-2.
I can't remember. I don't know. I thought we beat Raith Rovers in a penalty shootout after that. I seem to remember Alex Burns going against us.
See, if that's the case, I'm going to be absolutely devastated. I thought it was being really clever there.
Don't know. Might be wrong.
But the relief, anyway. But it was certainly abundantly clear. And you see that reaction in social media and such like after the game. I thought maybe a wee bit of an overreaction in terms of people being quite angry at the performance. But as the guys have already said, all you were really caring about was booking our place in the third qualifying round. And by hook or by crook, we got there.
That's right. I think going back to the penalties, I mean, it was as soon as we kind of it went to penalties, you immediately feared the worst. I think you're naturally pessimistic in those kind of circumstances anyway, but I don't really recall Trevor having saved penalties in too many occasions for us. Mark Gillespie was excellent at it. He had a number of saves. Don't remember Trevor saving too many. You think back to the St Mirren Cup game, the most recent example of a loss, Stranraer behind, not too far behind as well. And you're going back and history to think, when was the last time we actually won one of these? And then you contrast that with Coleraine having scored, I believe they scored all five of their penalties in their victory over Maribor. And you just feared the worst. So once it gets to that circumstance, it doesn't really matter. It's all about getting through. And fortunately enough, they eventually did that. And I think there's obviously going to be a mixture of relief and an outpouring of, you know, delight, relief, frustration, anger. I think people are entitled. The second half was a really poor performance. I think it's already been discussed. You know, that is the two goals were out with our control to some degree. I mean, it wasn't like Corain had been right for the word goal. They'd been kind of using any opportunity to try and influence the referee. There was several occasions where they went down really easily. Anytime the ball got swung into the box, they were claiming for handball. Anytime there was any kind of challenge in there, they were looking for penalties. So they were definitely looking for it. And you could argue there's a bit of naivety in our part that we allowed ourselves to be kind of taken into to some extent. The first one, I'm not entirely sure. We got a brief kind of section of footage where it looked like, you know, Ben's maybe better position to comment on that being there. But the sort of slight footage that we got, it just seemed to be the ball was like sort of comfortably getting grasped by Trevor, and suddenly see the player flying with O'Hara behind him, and it just looked like a kind of coming together. The second one again, you know, when you've even got somebody like, you know, from the kind of Northern Ireland side in there, and Tommy Wright saying that there was no contact whatsoever, I think it illustrates how soft a penalty it was. And to then have the red card just was doubly frustrating. So that aside, I mean, that, as Pepe's already said, that the performance was really, really worrying. Arguably one of the poorest second halves that we've had, but again, you have to take into account the pitch and everything else and stuff like that. So all of those are kind of outpourings, anger, frustration, relief. I think that kind of put the, immediately after it, kind of, you know, sent everything going in terms of social media.
Ben, I'd like to talk to you a bit about the experience of being over there for the game. Now, obviously, we would have taken a strong following to Northern Ireland, a pretty convenient trip for the majority of us, and I can imagine it would have been a fantastic occasion. It looked like an old-school style ground, and I'm sure that the locals would have been really up for it as well. So it would have been a cracking tie to be part of as a punter. Now, obviously, that wasn't the case. There was pictures of a few Motherwell fans that make their way over to Northern Ireland. But what was the experience like for you in terms of the build-up to the match and even the aftermath, I suppose, when it's all said and done and Motherwell have progressed in Europe? What was the feeling as you having the privilege to go over in your role as a journalist, but also as a Motherwell supporter as well?
Yeah, it was very odd. I think when I first got there, I wasn't really too sure what to expect, because I'll be completely honest, I wasn't obviously clued up Northern Irish football, how passionate they are about teams like Coleraine, because the first taxi I got in when I go over there, the guy asked me, oh, so you're Celtic or Rangers? I was like, I flew over here to get away from all that. But when I've got into Coleraine, I think I tweeted about it at the time, every second or third person's wearing Coleraine colours. There's wee badges in the sort of shop windows and things, the wee local ones. And there just seemed to be a good atmosphere about the town about it, more so on the Wednesday. And then obviously building up to the game, it was a bit more exasperated. But there was a lot of Motherwell fans over there as well. I think the number of Motherwell fans being over there has been played down a wee bit. It wasn't just a handful. There was, I would go as far to say, at least 100 Motherwell fans were over there in the bars and things like that. And there was a wee bit of trouble as well, which obviously won't touch on too much. It's been well documented, I think, all that went on. But in terms of the game itself, it just felt really empty. You can imagine, like, I was born in 2001, so I can't really comment on what terracing and things like that were like back in the day. But it was a proper old school football stadium, and you can imagine, I think that place holds 2,500. The fans would have been right on top of the players. Would that have made a difference to Coleraine? It probably would have, because they'd have had that extra support cheering them on. But it's a real shame, I think, because for Coleraine, that's like the first time, I think, that they've got to that stage. And the fact that their fans couldn't get to witness that felt quite sad. And the same for Motherwell as well. I mean, you could imagine that probably a few thousand Motherwell fans would have went over, and perhaps only a few hundred would have been in the ground, but you'd have still had thousands in and about the place. So it felt really weird. Like, I came out the ground that about 20 to midnight, you know, and like, the streets are dead. Even if when the final whistle goes, there's just nothing. You can just hear Trevor Cash and a few of the Mullow boys obviously celebrating. But it just felt a bit empty, and it's a real shame. And it's going to be, obviously, fans will be delighted if Mullow get into the group stages, if they do manage to get that far, which would be an incredible achievement. But the fact that that could happen at Fir Park and the whistle goes and there's pretty much dead silence, there's just something that doesn't sit quite right with me.
And what's it like kind of during the game in terms of we don't really get to see the personnel out with the players and the staff in the dugouts. Is there more than that? Is there scouts, directors? We obviously don't see into the stand to see who's there. You can hear the odd cheer. Or in certain games, like for instance, Hibs versus Rangers yesterday, the cheers when the goals went in were pretty loud. And you can tell that that wasn't manufactured noise. That was actually noise from within the stadium. Is it busy? It's so difficult to get a sense of anything in regards to the atmosphere.
It's like, see, in terms of like directors, journalists, all that type of thing, it's not the same. Like, I think for SPFL teams just now, I think it's like 20 non-rights holders journalists that are allowed in the stadium. But then all your directors of both teams are still there, and it's likely the directors you've probably heard in games like Hibs v Rangers. So you've still maybe got in the stand, I'd maybe say close to about probably somewhere between 80 and 100 people maybe. I might be wrong in that. It's just sort of from what I see. It depends on the game you go to as well. Like I went to, I've been at Livingston Ross County, for example, and there was maybe about 10 journalists and a few directors here and there. When the goals went in, you would hear nothing. But there was another, like the Mullow Glentoran game, for example, was really busy with Mullow directors. You obviously had all the people coming over from Glentoran, and the media presence was a bit bigger as well. So they games are probably 80 to 100. But it is a bit weird. All that side of things, it's changed a wee bit. Like, you can't sit next to each other and you all need to wear masks. You get contact and trace forms, and then you need to sit 2 metres apart from the managers and players at the end of the game. But the big difference is the fans. Is like when the ball kicks off and people are watching the game, you can, I suppose that's the one interesting thing for me, is you can actually hear what's going on. Like the way we were sitting in Coleraine is right next to the pitch. So when Mullow were defending the first half, you can hear like everything that is being said between the players. So from that side of things, it's really interesting. But in terms of people inside the ground, not much has changed apart from obviously the lack of fans, which has been more apparent as the games have rolled on.
I think pretty much like the old days, going to watch Motherwell reserves when you would maybe be sitting in the stand with about 100 odd fans and hearing everything that's said, and when you score, there's not much atmosphere. It sounds pretty much like that. But as Ben said, he's only. Was born in 2001, so probably need to get the privilege of going to watch the reserves back then, because I'm maybe getting an old man now by the sound of it.
No, I've been to a few Mullow reserve games in terms of like in previous roles that I've had, and it is very much like that. And I think it's, I know people have said like, oh, it's still competitive games, it can't have an effect on the players. I think it definitely has. You can tell in these games that the intensity isn't quite there. Like if Mullow, for example, obviously being a Mullow podcast, if Mullow are on that side next to the stand attacking in the first half, and you've got a couple thousand fans shouting them on, I mean, Sherwin Sadoff, one thing I always thought about is like, might sound quite odd, but Sherwin Sadoff against Hibs last year, where he cut inside and put it in the top bin, he's got loads of fans from that side shouting him on to take that chance and take the shot. Does he take that without fans in the ground? I don't think he probably does. Now, albeit that's quite a hypothetical situation, but the fans definitely give, I know the old cliches is the 12th man, but they definitely have an impact. And I think these games have really shown that the intensity is a bit lower, and it feels like even though the prize is still the same, it doesn't feel like it's actually there. So I think the comparison to reserve games is probably a bit truer than some people actually give it credit for.
It's strange to say that, because I've been watching the Spurs documentary on Amazon, and Daniel Levy's been a big advocate of games not being played behind closed doors, because he talks up the sporting advantage of playing at home and how significant that is for you, and the fact that the fans not being in the stadium definitely changes that dynamic. And if you look through the results even so far this season, the amount of away wins, I think year on year must be up quite considerably. Just, and I do obviously take on board the fact that that's not completely down to not having fans inside the stadium. But I'm sure it's a big factor. And I think another thing that you said there, Ben, rings true as well. It must drive on players, perhaps in the last 15, 20 minutes when fatigue is beginning to set in. The fans drive you on. The fans make you run that extra couple of yards to charge down a loose pass or even a lost cause at times, because you're so determined to win for these fans inside the stadium. And I would like to see the figures again in terms of the distance covered with fans in the stadium to them not being in the stadium, because I think the fans quite often set the pace and the atmosphere of the game.
I think that players have adjusted to it more so in recent weeks. Like, I've seen in the last few weeks that the score lines have started to get slightly bigger and as players adjust to their new environments. But especially the first few weeks, I don't think anybody can really say there was any particular Scottish Premiership game that they enjoyed watching. It looked like the players were almost having to adapt to this culture shock of nobody was actually there. And even if you watch back the Ross County Celtic and Aberdeen Kilmarnock games, even though there was 300 fans in, I mean, you're not allowed to clap, stand up, pretty much do anything. You're literally just to sit there and be silent for 90 minutes. That doesn't really, having those 300 fans in is great. It's a step, well, it was a step forward at the time, but they weren't really able to add anything because of all the restrictions. And for me, it's a shame because I think it's going to be like this for a long, long time. I can't see how we get fans in the door before January, if I'm being completely honest, in any sort of number. And I think we'll really struggle to see full crowds at all this season. I mean, who knows, the way things are going in the current situation as this has been recorded, it could be an undeterminable amount of time before we actually see any fans in sort of numbers coming in. So it's something that players are going to have to get used to. And I think in the last few weeks that you've seen, they're starting to get used to that. But obviously, it's not ideal for anybody involved. And the big thing, obviously, is the revenue streams, is clubs can't go forever without fans.
That was a very brave move there, taking on that word, and I'll not try and attempt it myself. The game against Aberdeen yesterday, Andy, on last week's podcast, you mentioned the fact that Motherwell going to Pittodrie and coming up in the right side of a result wasn't particularly uncommon. Though I think after Thursday night, not many of us would have fancied our chances. Certainly not many of us would have fancied being 3-0 up after 24 minutes. I mentioned on Twitter last night, I thought it was one of the most complete away performances from a Motherwell side that I can remember, maybe going as far back as 5-10 years. It was a very, very comfortable but impressive performance. We took our chances when we were afforded them, and then we managed the game brilliantly as well. I think at 3-0, Aberdeen would maybe struggle to argue that it was Motherwell that had the better of the chances. Yes, there was one before the half-time break that came off the inside of Trevor Carson's post. But after that, Aberdeen very rarely threatened the goal. We did have a few half chances. We retained the ball brilliantly. We pressed. We got up in Aberdeen's faces. They resorted to really poor and cynical fouls. It was a really classy Motherwell display, and they absolutely turned over an Aberdeen side that have really been thinking a lot of themselves in the early part of the season.
That's right. It's one of the certainly the most accomplished display this season. How far you go back to find one of a similar caliber? Well, that's up for debate. But you know, certainly we couldn't have asked for any better. Couldn't have dreamt of coming out any better than that. Things went our way initially. Justifiable penalty, the keeper giving us a helping hand with the second, although it required composure and accuracy for Chris Long, and nice to see Bevis on the mark as well, and significantly us seemingly taking one of these kind of set pieces that we don't seem to have done a huge amount with so far this season. But as you say, the kind of game management of it seemed to be like everything that the second half and in Northern Ireland wasn't. there was no question that the focus was going to be allowed to drop. Concentration levels were there throughout. There was no hint of a fatigue in the team at all, which was really encouraging as well after the kind of 120 minutes stint and half an hour of that with 10 men as well. So it's difficult to sort of find fault, you know, in anywhere throughout the team on Sunday there. It's really satisfying result. Moves us up the table. And nice to be able to look down at a few teams. Helps the goal difference as well. You know, blanks out the or matches out the kind of three goals that we conceded at Parkhead a couple of weekends ago as well. So, you know, positives throughout. And Trevor Carson really didn't have a save to make. They had the one chance that came off the post. But that apart, you were completely in control of things. I think you've got to give the team a lot of credit, Robinson as well. I mean, I wonder how much time they actually had to spend on the training ground to work in things. The focus would clearly have been trying to get through the European tie. I don't know when we come back from Northern Ireland, but you know, you'd imagine they'd have been bussing it up to Aberdeen this Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. You know, you're talking maybe like one and a half kind of goes at a training session in there to sort of prepare for that game. So, I mean, credit is due for the way they played, the setup, the organisation, and you know, coming home with a 3-0 win at Pittodrie on the back of, you know, the six successive wins that they've had going for a seventh is you know, it's a performance that has to be admired.
Scott, real stars across the park in Motherwell jerseys. Bevis McGabby, a player that was much maligned during the latter stages of last season, didn't seem at all comfortable. I think we all kind of were quite harsh on him in the sense that we had no faith that if he came back into the team that he was capable of doing a job. But he's clearly worked very hard during the time without football. He's come back and he looks an absolute rock in the centre of our defence. He's got more comfortable on the ball. He's formed a very strong partnership beside Declan Gallagher. Yes, it's easy to get carried away, and yes, he still has got a lot of room for improvement. But I think a great deal of credit has to be laid at his door for his attitude to his game and the improvements that he's made thus far.
I don't know if I completely agree with you. I think he's played well, right? And I do. But I still think he's a bomb scare waiting to happen. I just don't see him long term. I'm probably being really, really harsh. I think if it wasn't for Alan Campbell, he would have been man of the match. I just think that every time that he gets on the ball, I think Aberdeen had a real off day. I think against in another game, he's just a mistake waiting to happen. At times, I'm probably being really, really harsh on him, because his performances up until the penalty, but I don't think he's been that great before the Coleraine game. He's had one good game, so I'm not going to get myself too carried away. If he consistently puts in the performances, then fair enough. But at the moment, I'm not completely convinced. I think he looks far better as part of a three than he does a two. I think that he, in the centre with Declan Gallagher and Ricky Lamy, his side, he certainly looks more accomplished. But what I will say is, I mean, if they, for example, did go back to a four at the moment, then would it, if you say to me at the start of the season, Ricky Lamy or McGabby, I would have said Lamy hands down. But at the moment, this will sound a bit contradictory. You would need to go for McGabby. I think even in the commentators on the Aberdeen TV actually said that, I think it was probably Billy Dodds that said that Lamy and McGabby have been kind of a susceptible to some mistakes, and that's where Aberdeen should be focusing. But he has improving, so I will give him a chance, but I'm definitely not going to get carried away and still heart in the mouth material for me at the moment, unfortunately.
Ben, I feel that there was maybe a bit of both in my assessment and also in Scott's, where maybe both of us are getting slightly carried away, but just to different scales and on different sides. The my point that he's forged a solid partnership with Declan Gallagher, maybe is a wee bit off the mark, but what I see certainly there is a player that's improving on a week by week basis. And Stephen Robinson has got a knack of unearthing players referred to as kind of rough diamonds and adding some polish to their game and adding some value. Now, this is a dangerous comparison, and so sit on your seats and hold on tight. But Cedric Kiprey arrived at Motherwell and certainly caused a few heart and mouth moments, but his power and his strength got him through, and his pace as well was another big factor in his game. Could Bevis, with time, go down that path and continue his road to improvement?
I think they're two completely different. I mean, by the time, I mean, Bevis McGabby's been at Mullow for just about a year now, or a similar amount of time to Cedric Kiprey had spent at Fir Park, and Cedric Kiprey by this time had been away for £1 million. But I think the general point, I think, is decent. I think it would probably, for Mullow and McGabby, the first season probably didn't go as well as he perhaps hoped, didn't get a lot of game time initially. But this season he's been terrific. I think it's very hard to fault him for his for this season. I think the perception Mullow fans have of him from last season is still lingering over a wee bit, because it still is very early into this season. But he definitely has shown some different. Declan Gallagher's a very good defender, international, but he's not the quickest person in the world. Bevis McGabby does sort of offer that alternative where he's quite quick in his feet, he's athletic, perhaps not as good defensively as his other ones like Ricky Lamy and Declan Gallagher, but certainly against Aberdeen I think he showed the sort of player he can be. I mean, if he can be that physical in the box, he could potentially be a danger up the other end as well. He won pretty much all his headers, he was physical, and it's promising. I think it'll be good. I think as well at Parkhead, although that was 3-0, I did hear as well that he did all right in that game. So there's definitely positive signs, and I think the red card for him in Coleraine was very, very harsh. I think it was just sort of some sort of coming together and the referee's seen that wrong, and looking back on it, I don't think it was even a foul, never mind a red card. So he started the season really well, and I think you messaged me as well. I think the other one from the Aberdeen game to touch on is Tony Watt, who looks in recent weeks like a completely different player. Everybody knows the ability that Tony Watt has. Obviously, perhaps the goal against Barcelona for Celtic has lingered over him for much of his career, and he's had quite a nomadic path in football since then, but the last few weeks have really shown what he can do. I mean, I think he's going to be a bit of a Ryan Bowman type player for Mullow, where he's probably not going to score you 15, 20 goals a season, but his link-up play is going to be absolutely valuable. And I don't want to compare him to Lyndon Dykes, but it's going to be a sort of similar role, whereas Lyndon Dykes didn't score lots of goals for Livingston. He scored a few, I think he scored like 8 or 9, but he also got a similar amount in assists. I can see Tony Watt having a sort of similar role at Mullow, and if they can, Mullow can find somebody who can score those 10, 15 goals a season. Chris Long getting off the mark in Aberdeen's probably good, albeit Joe Lewis having a howler against Mullow again, he probably doesn't really want to see any Clark and Amber strips anytime soon. But I think Tony Watt, Bevis McGabby, Liam Polworth looked back to his best as well at Pittodrie, and Alan Campbell again, and I think we've all ran out of words for him. So overall against that, we've been some very, very good positive displays, and it's all about taking that forward into another big week.
Yeah, for me, Tony Watt's most impressive performance in a Motherwell jersey yesterday. He really looks like he's bulked up as well, and he was a player in the second half that the Aberdeen players really took a like to kicking lumps out of. Shea Logan especially, I think that John Beaton did a wee bit of scoreboard refereeing, to be perfectly honest with you, because Logan got booked within a minute of coming on, and then 10 minutes later committed another yellow card foul on Tony Watt, which Beaton let slide only because it was 3-0 for me. It looked like an absolute stonewall second booking, and what would have subsequently been a red card for Shea Logan. I do feel that we're verging in dangerous territory with the comparisons. I can only imagine the slagging that I'm going to get for comparing Bevis Mugabe to Cedric Kipre. And then we've also got Lyndon Dykes as well, playing for, up front for us. So we might become the... We might forge a reputation as the comparison podcast, a left field comparison podcast. Andy, Ben mentioned that we were running out of words for Alan Campbell, but again, and bearing in mind that Alan Campbell took what looked like quite a hefty knock on Thursday night, was a doubt for yesterday's game. But my God, he absolutely ran the show yet again. Lewis Ferguson, a player that is very much hyped up amongst the Scottish media. You sometimes had to double check that he was actually on the pitch. Alan Campbell by far got the better of him. And it was just another brilliant leader performance from Alan Campbell. He's a driving force. He's a heartbeat of our team. And he gets better and better with every performance in claret and amber.
I think the words we want to hear in relation to Alan Campbell are something along the lines of Alan Campbell signs 2-year deal. It's a growing concern that with every passing week closer to the running down of his contract, his performances seem to get better and better. But he's adding, well, we all know what he's adding to his game. He's adding consistency. We all knew that he's got that ability to break up play. He's got the ability to progress up the park. He's adding goals to his game, tenacity, work rate. You know, the plaudits keep coming, and not only from those of a claret and amber persuasion either. McInnes on Sunday was talking about big style as well. So it's great to see him doing what he's doing. He's an essential part of the team, and you kind of worry what life would be like in the immediate aftermath post Alan Campbell, where he happened to go before the end of this particular transfer window. So we can only hope that in the background conversations are happening to, worst case scenario, protect the club a bit more in terms of a longer deal for him. If he does, which we know eventually he will, you'll move on to bigger and better things. But you know, he's certainly an integral part of the kind of midfield. And again, you were kind of concerned at whether he was actually going to feature at the weekend. You know, we saw him going off on Thursday evening. We then had the signing of Robbie Crawford from Livingston to kind of bolster the midfield. And obviously, we needed strengthening in that element of the field. And it has the effect that it allows some youngsters to go out and loan as well. But you know, you kind of putting two and two together there and maybe coming up with five, we kind of wrongly assumed that he was going to be missing for Sunday. And he just strolled through the game as he's been doing more and more of late.
Hey, how does the offer of free beer sound to you? Yes, free beer. Thanks to our friends at beer52.com, you have the opportunity to sip 8 free exclusive craft beers from around the world. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/MFC, pay the postage, and what's more, you'll get 2 extra free beers, so that's a total of 10 free beers. beer52.com/MFC.
We'll talk about then coming off Robbie Crawford and loan from Livingston, and then 3 departures from the club as well. Pepe, we'll start with the outgoings, and we discussed perhaps an opportunity for Jamie Semple. Last week, with the injury to Liam Donnelly and the kind of mountain injury list that we do have just now, he's joined Cove Rangers until the end of the season. Harry Robinson, who got a few opportunities in the Europa League and then also against Dundee United in the Premiership, he's joined Queen of the South and loaned to the end of the season. And then there's Ross McKeever, who I think we all believed had already left for Morton, but appears to have definitely left for Morton now. Another one that a season-long loan. I think first and foremost, you've got to look at it as opportunities for these young guys to get some much-needed game time under their belts and become men, really. The regular experience of playing against older guys, the Championship, a physical league as well. So it will require them to bulk up and really kind of work on that side of their game. And I think you look at all three, Semple especially, who has found game time very limited and very sporadic. McKeever burst onto the scene with that goal at Ross County in Boxing Day of last year. But again, very, very few performances. And when he did get an opportunity, it looked like he was still got a wee bit of developing to go and maybe needed that extra experience of playing every week. So that, to me, seems like a positive. And then you look at Harry Robinson, who, in fairness, is a bit of an unknown quantity. We've not seen enough of him to really make a judgment call one way or another, but you would think with the manager being his old man, he would certainly know what's required for his future.
I was certainly a lot of outgoings. I was a wee bit surprised, certainly, with Jamie Sam poking out. I kind of seen him. I've not seen a great deal of him, really, just living off his hype. I thought that he would have been the one, maybe to be the next one coming along the conveyor belt, and he may still be. But I think it's a good move for him. I think even if he had stayed, he would still have maybe featured on the bench a bit more and maybe get flung on in League Cup games or the odd game here and there. Whereas I think he'll go to Cove and we'll really see how he progresses there. It'll make or break his time at Motherwell. And that's wrong. We're releasing players and stuff. McKeever's another one that he kind of I don't mean he's living off the go against Ross County, but I didn't really see much that thought, oh, I really hope that he signs a new contract or anything like that. But at the end of the day, this is, as you say, the Championship's a kind of strong league. He'll go out and hopefully goes out and scores a barrel of the goals and comes back to us and again, it's the next one in that we can bring into our first team. The signing of Robbie Crawford, again, it's, for me, it's relatively unknown. I looked kind of at his stats and he's certainly played a lot of games for Ayr and I think he only played 20-odd games for Livingston. And let's not be a bit of a bush. It's not an over kind of exciting signing, is it, really? Let's be honest. But at the end of the day, the manager must see something in him. And we need to give him a chance. And at the end of the day, he's going to have to fight his way into that team. So let's hope he does that and hope that he becomes a good acquisition. I think a lot of this loaning out is, I've said before about this Operation Brave when we were getting loaned out. And they weren't getting the points and stuff like that. And I think the great example of that system is Dom Thomas. I think he would have flourished more if he had been released early to go on loan. He was in that kind of a too good to go out, but not quite good enough to get into the first team. So let's hope that all of these moves work out for these guys and they come back as a more rounded player and ready for action, particularly because I think by the end of the season, as we've just spoke about, I think we'll be really lucky if we've still got Alan Campbell.
Ben, it seems like the natural step with the uncertainty over the reserve football in Scotland as well. There's a real risk that the many youth players not considered good enough for their first team at their parent clubs could almost be somewhat lost to the game because they're just sitting there stagnating almost.
Yeah, it is a massive concern, I think, for a lot of clubs. I know Stephen Robinson was speaking to us about it a few weeks ago. Like, there were a problem at the start of the season, especially like players like Jamie Semple, Dean Cornelius, people like that. They weren't able to actually send them out on loan because they needed them for the squad. Because the thing is with this year, with the 5-sub rule in place, teams really could be doing with running slightly bigger squads. I mean, they're not really a worse year from it. So it comes that predicament. They keep these young guys on the bench. Basically, they're just there to fill a place and they're not really going to get any minutes because reserve football's out the window. And yes, they're involved in the senior setup, but they'll never really get a chance of getting minutes, or is just taking that punt and sending the likes of Ross McIver and Jamie Semple out on loan better? I think it has to be the latter. And I mean, I know Robinson's actually quite keen to get another couple of them out the door out on loan because that's what a lot of these guys are going to lack this year. It's not like years gone by where your likes of Dom Thomas, James Scott, David Turnbull have still been able to get regular minutes from the reserve side. I mean, if you look at David Turnbull last year, I mean, he probably wouldn't have played last season if it weren't for those crucial reserve games that he played in at the likes of Capello. So I think it is massive for these guys to get the minutes, and I think probably the only one that's sort of close to that now in the first team is Barry Maguire. Everybody else is sort of on the fringes, still very promising prospects and still early in their careers, but their chances of game time this season at Fir Park are probably very limited. So it's good to see the club sort of hoping to develop their talent like the likes of Chris Cadden, who have went out on loan and then gone on to bigger things. And I'm sure the club will be hoping for similar products with the latest group of young people to go out.
Let's look ahead to Thursday night's Europa League third round qualifying match with Hapoel Beersheva. Ben, I would imagine that you'll have done a wee bit of homework on our Israeli opponents on Thursday night. It's a bit of a step into the unknown. I can imagine that it's provided the club with a few logistical headaches as well, arranging transport at such late notice. The game itself has been moved, I believe it's about 50 miles away from Hapoel's normal stadium due to works that have been done on their stadium. Israel also currently in a full lockdown situation as well. So many factors to consider. But looking at the game first and foremost, you've got an opportunity to progress into the playoff stages of the competition. One game away, with that game being at home from the group stages. It's a massive game for the club in financial implications, in terms of the potential to reach the group stages for the first time in the club's history. It's going to be a huge occasion.
Yeah, I mean, to touch on sort of your first point about the sort of logistical nightmare, it has been an absolute nightmare for the club, having spoken to. That's the reason I'm not going to Israel on Thursday. The club can't, there's no Scottish media going out to Israel on Thursday, simply for because of all the restrictions that are in place just now with the Europa League and Israel's own coronavirus situation. There was actually talks last week about the game being played in Albania, but it has been moved to, I think, just outside Tel Aviv, as far as I know just now. But it's been a bit of a headache, I don't think, in terms of games abroad just now. I mean, I don't think going abroad at all is ideal, but Israel is probably one of the worst countries you could go to. So hopefully it all goes all right in that part. But in terms of the game, it's massive for Mull. I mean, I know Aberdeen have got a Sporting Lisbon side who are currently, they don't actually know if that game's going to go ahead yet because of Sporting's COVID situation. But Mull have definitely got the easiest tie of sort of Aberdeen and Rangers on the main Europa League path. And Hapoel Beersheva in the last round, they were playing FK Lecce, and a team you would probably expect Hapoel to breeze past comfortably. Lecce were 1-0 up in that until the 86th minute. They got a man sent off, and then two goals in the last sort of 3 or 4 minutes for Beersheva got them through just by the skin of their teeth. And if Mull got Lecce, you would expect Mull to be favourites. So if they can push them all the way, you would like to think Mull could do similar. Whether the legs are still going to be there, I think the performance against Aberdeen shows that they probably will be, which are a major positive to go and put in the energy levels they did away to Pittodrie after 120 grueling physically and mentally minutes over in Northern Ireland was really good. But in terms of Mull's chances of getting to the Europa League group stage, it sounds silly to even mention the two of them in the same sentence, but when you think of the teams Mull have got, and they're not easy teams, but Beersheva, Victoria Plzeň, or another team that I'm not going to try and pronounce, not at all, not going to embarrass myself by that, doing
some
that.
Some mob from Denmark.
Yes, that's the one, I will take that. But it's the best chance Mull have had in a very long time to get to those group stages. And I think they've had the benefit of the one-off games as well. It's not like if they get a good result in Beersheva, then they need to go and do it again at Fir Park. It's a winner-takes-all tie. And I think that will really help Mull in these two rounds. But first of all, before you start thinking about the group stage, need to take care of Thursday, and it'll be a very difficult game. They pushed Celtic all the way a few years ago, and I think that's probably the only real experienced Scottish football fans have had with Beersheva. But if it's similar to that, Mull will be in for a tough game. But you never know in these cup competitions. Stephen Robinson, fairly decent couple of cup runs a wee while ago now. So who knows? But obviously it'll be good for the coefficient as well if Mull will manage to get through. And then a decent enough home tie in the playoff round.
Andy, I think what Ben saying in summary there is it's a bit of a step into the unknown, isn't it? But you look at our recent form, and it's certainly been much improved. We're off the back of three massive results in the context of our season. We've moved ourselves off the foot of the table, which I know doesn't count for much at this early juncture, but of course you've got to get that first win under your belts and then try and gather some momentum. That's what we've managed to do. The Aberdeen game will be a huge boost to everyone around Fir Park, and it was also showing that we're able to kind of recover from the exertions of European football and bring that into domestic football. We now need to do the same, but just in reverse on Thursday night.
That's it. I mean, we've taken some steps of improving results. The performances perhaps haven't quite been there Sunday accepted, apart from perhaps in spells within games. But I mean, we're certainly getting there in terms of results, which breeds confidence, and you take positives out of each scenario. You know, for example, we limited Aberdeen to that single opportunity that came off the post. The opportunities that St Johnson had against us were largely self-inflicted. But you look at that and you think two clean sheets in that regard. Even the game against Duo Coleraine, we rode our luck a couple of occasions, but the kind of history books will show that it was two penalties that were required to beat Trevor Carson. So you can claim there that you weren't beaten from open play. So you kind of take all these positives and build it, and you know, use it to strengthen the kind of mindset that we're going to be capable of going over there. But it really is, I mean, a step into the unknown. Perhaps the kind of most comparative in terms of climate might be the game against Flamartari over there. But you know, how many players are left from that kind of European run? There's probably more of them than the coaching staff, if anything. But so there's not for Motherwell going to be in Europe that kind of many examples that you can pull. So I mean, that can be good or it can be bad. You know, you can go over there with a certain kind of mindset of what you're going to be up against, and you know, preparing yourself for something that might not actually materialise, or you know, you can go the other way and you'll be kind of get a nasty surprise. So all we can really do is be open-minded about what the task is ahead of them. But in terms of our own preparation, we've certainly been getting ourselves in the right direction to go over there. You'll certainly feel a confidence to take on the Israeli side.
Scott, game three in the Europa League, we weren't really looking forward to the first one. We were looking forward to the second one a lot more, and I think it's fair to say that we go into the third one in really high spirits. Yes, as Andy alluded to, the performances haven't been perfect, not by a long stretch, but on the back of a 3-0 success at Pittodrie and a very strong showing, we've got to look forward to this one. It's another massive occasion. It's a chance to take that extra step closer to the group stages. We currently sit here and we're not 100% sure how we're going to follow the game, but it's certainly going to be another special night, and just one that we desperately want to win.
I think the crucial thing that you said there is that the Aberdeen game, I think the difference that game has made to me, even like this, the positivity, it just shows you that 90 minutes can change. I think if we had get easily beaten against Aberdeen or scraped a nothing each draw and had a really poor performance, I think my mindset would have been completely different getting into this game. I'm actually really looking forward to it. It's kind of the first time this season that I'm kind of counting down the days to the game and praying that I get the Welsh Society delivery of pies. It's just a complete unknown. It's completely different. I don't know. I mean, I think they will be the kind of slight favourites, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's really different. The only thing that I don't know about at the moment, I don't know if any of you guys can enlighten me, is how do we watch it? I mean, is it? Have I missed? I've been looking. I looked before I come on to make sure that I wasn't going to sound stupid, but I couldn't see if there was any announcement of how, as fans, we were going to watch it. And obviously, that's the most important thing, because it is quite a big game for us.
Well, worryingly, Premier Sport have confirmed that they'll be showing the Celtic game, which kicks off. I think it's a 6 o'clock kickoff, their game, whereas we, of course, are half past six. That's not a positive sign in the fact that it doesn't look like we'll be on Premier. The honest answer is I don't know. There was kind of a few hints and suggestions that an announcement would be forthcoming before the Coleraine game, but it's all been very quiet on this one. I don't know whether what Ben mentioned about the fact that there's no media travelling, will that affect broadcasting from a British company covering the game?
You would think it's really just down to somebody paying for the feed. I mean, yeah. A lot of the commentaries have been done for like commentators' living rooms or back studies or whatever. I think it's just a case of somebody deciding that there's going to be enough interest to justify them, you know, paying for the feed.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's something that the club would consider doing if they were able. Surely, if there's not a great deal of demand for it, but obviously a demand amongst some other supporters. I don't know whether there would maybe be able to be a deal done there that ensured that our supporters could see the game. Certainly, there'll be mass disappointment amongst some other fans. If not only can nobody attend the game, but they also can't see the game. That'd be incredibly frustrating, considering how big a game this is for the club. I guess we just have to watch this space. Imagine that the players and staff will set out on Wednesday, so there isn't really much time for an announcement. I think tomorrow will be quite significant in that regard. It's so tricky because, as you already pointed out there, and I think that happens across the sports. For instance, I always knew that the snooker commentary from China and the Shanghai Masters and things like that was done on a porta cabin at the end of one of the runways at London Heathrow Airport. So you don't necessarily need commentators there, but we certainly need footage. And I think that's where this becomes rather uncertain. It doesn't even seem like
you would think it's going to come down to what, I don't know, what other Israeli teams are playing. And again, it's kind of, well, certainly in my part, Magnum's of the standing of the team that we're facing. What kind of size of club are they in Israeli terms? You know, do they command an audience in the same way as that, you know, maybe Rangers and Celtic do here, that the vast majority of the viewing public are going to be interested in them? So I would imagine it comes down to whether that's going to be covered by an Israeli channel, what other Israeli teams, if any, are playing at the same evening at the same time, which may take precedence over your game. And then thereafter, if there is someone covering it, it's who's prepared to stump up to get the feed. So hopefully somebody will.
Well, yeah. I've just looked up a stat. Hapoel Beersheba get a rough attendance of 10,614 as of last season. So that's obviously fairly decent. But I mean, I know you can't really gauge social media much, especially when we're on the UK Twitter and things like that. But there doesn't seem to be much of a following for Beersheba at all online. It is going to come down. There's obviously going to be a massive demand from Mullow fans, perhaps maybe sort of high early thousands, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 Mullow fans, perhaps, who would actively go and watch the games in terms of individual streams. But it is going to come down to, I think, whoever's streaming it from an Israeli TV channel or whatnot. I think I've seen somewhere Maccabi Tel Aviv are playing in the Champions League, but that's obviously on the Wednesday. And I think Hapoel are the only Israeli team, if my research isn't wrong.
I'm afraid it is, Ben. Maccabi Haifa are playing at 6 o'clock on Thursday. They play at half five against Rostov, Maccabi beat Beersheba yesterday 3-1 in the league. So, yeah, we're up against them as well. But I wouldn't really be able to tell you a great deal about their standing. And I know they're top of the Israeli league just now, but I don't really know much about them either.
No, I think it'll obviously be a massive shame if fans can't get to watch it. I think just in terms of the media prints that are going to be over there from sort of Scottish rights, like I know after the game we're going to be Zoom calling Stephen Robinson after it, because the Hapoel Beersheba aren't having any press conferences in or out of their stadium after the game. So even if journalists were going over there, it would almost be a pointless exercise, because you'd literally go and watch the game and Zoom call them from the car park outside in Israel anyway. But it's going to be interesting to see how you can actually watch this. I mean, me sitting here, I don't even know what's going to be happening with that. I'm hoping that maybe as we record this on the Monday night, the Tuesday morning, when Stephen Robinson speaks to the media again before they fly out to Israel, there are a bit more answers coming that way. But it remains to be seen. And hopefully for Mullow fans, they are able to watch that, because it will be a big game. And I mean, I think Mullow go into it slight underdogs, and if that is the case, the chances are Beersheba could get a victory. And if Mullow's last European game for who knows how long, fans can't watch it, that'd be a real shame.
Is it the case that the team go out on Wednesday or about tomorrow?
I believe it is either late Tuesday or early Wednesday. There's a thing with the Europa League, obviously, where they need to be in the opposing country 24 hours previous. So given the flight time to Israel, which I think I clocked is about 4.5 to 5 hours, I wouldn't be surprised leaving on the Tuesday night, but probably more likely Wednesday morning. It sounds as if, as we record this on Monday, they'll be training on the Tuesday before flying out to Israel for the Thursday. So it'll be interesting to see, but obviously fingers crossed for everybody that Mullow fans can watch that game.
Just a final one on Thursday night, Scott. The fact that we've got a few international players amongst our ranks as well, how much does that help? The fact that these guys have got experience of travelling with the national sides and sampling different football cultures, and how important will these guys be to guide the younger guys through that are completely new to these surroundings and these new environments?
I mean, you look at even guys like some of your, like Alan Campbell, for example. I mean, he's done a fair bit of travelling with the under-21s. I think it is important, because there is going to be a lot of players that need to get used to the climate and stuff like that. But I think we've got enough experience there that I don't think obviously Declan Gallagher being the captain, relatively new international, but at the same time he's not had much experience playing club football in Europe. You look at guys like Tony Watt though, do you know what I mean? I mean he's played in the new camp for Celtic. I don't know if you know, but he scored the winning goal for Celtic against Barcelona. I don't know if that's been mentioned ever, but I'm sure that'll get mentioned throughout it. But listen, I think we've got quite an experienced Maccabi, obviously, international, Gallagher, Trevor Carson. I think we've got that enough experience. And I think it is quite important that these guys take some of the younger guys, like maybe like Jake Hasty and stuff like that, under their wing. Because at the end of the day, it is going to be a completely different environment. But at the end of the day, it's really just important what happens in the 90 minutes, isn't it? And hopefully the squad gels together and we're talking about this next week, about our next opponents.
Well, quickly look ahead as we move towards finishing up to the fixture on Sunday against Rangers at Fir Park. The games are coming thick and fast, aren't they, Andy? And it is going to be very, very testing on what isn't a particularly large squad. We don't know what happens in the Thursday night, and I think that can shape in quite a big way what kind of mood we go into Sunday's match in. You look at our opponents, they've been very strong in the early parts of the season, sweeping most sides away quite comfortably, but yesterday's 2-2 draw with Hibs was their second draw away from home. Under Steven Gerrard, Rangers have made a bit of a habit of of dropping points on their travels, and those points tend to be costly come the business end of the season. It's going to be a very tough game. They've got a lot of quality. There's no getting away from that. But it would just be nice to see Motherwell go toe-to-toe with Rangers and give them a game, because there's so many occasions we look towards these games and think, oh, I fancy our chances here. We could really get something. And let's be honest, in a league fixture, it's not happened since 1997. It's a long way to go back to find a...
Well, I think Ben mentioned that he was born in kind of 2001, was it there? Then I don't think it was a kind of backside after that. It might still have been Nappies the last time that I think we beat Rangers at Fir Park.
That is horrendous. I just feel as if I'm about 70 on this. Unbelievable.
I think we're all in the same boat, but that's how long ago it is. Obviously, discounting the playoff game, but there's been so many occasions where this is going to be the one, and it doesn't seem to matter whether we're good, whether we're bad, whether we're indifferent. We just don't get the result. We've had opportunities there. You think you're like Jim O'Brien's missed penalty with like 5-10 minutes to go. We've had opportunities where we've been a couple of goals up and been pulled back. Or, there's been opportunities that have been passed up. So sooner or later, we are going to beat them. I didn't actually like the fact that they dropped 2 points on Sunday there. I always kind of feel that if they drop points, both halves of the Old Firm, if they fail in one weekend and you happen to get them the next week, there's always the opportunity that they look to redress the balance somewhat, and whoever that team that follows can be in the firing line. Now, it can work the other way, of course, it's that they get edgy about it and you can take advantage of it. But it is going to be difficult. I think it's been alluded to on a couple of occasions. In terms of our schedule, we've had in the little more in the space of about 10 and 11 days, we've been away to Northern Ireland. We've then returned, we've been almost immediately away to Aberdeen, one of the kind of furthest away trips that we can be handed after a European away game. We've then got Israel, and again, whilst we're playing at home, you've got one of the most difficult opponents that you could possibly get. So it's certainly a very testing schedule is going to be presented to us in the next few days. Just need to see how it goes. It's a different dynamic. Again, we're having no fans in there, and it didn't really do anything for us in the pre-season game at Ibrox, not having any kind of supporters there. But you do wonder, does that change things? We all know that the influence that Old Firm fans can bring in a referee. And again, it didn't really happen in the game at Parkhead, but you just kind of wonder. You kind of look for wee things that might turn things slightly your way or less the way of the opposition. And hopefully this is going to be the one. We may get the result that we were dreaming of to get through into the next round, and we continue in the good vibes, the good form that we're kind of showing in terms of results and go in there. In a sense, we getting the result against Aberdeen, you're kind of 3 points better off than I think a lot of supporters would have anticipated as being or having with these two games coming up. So you're already 3 points to the good in some respects. So nothing to lose. Get stuck in about them. Maybe this will be the one.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the discounting two results against Rangers in the league. Of course, the game back in 1998 where we wore the luminous strips and beat Rangers 2-1, and then Boxing Day 2002 where James McFadden slotted home a penalty to win the game. So yes, we've also mentioned the
Louis Malt semi-final. I know it's not a league game, but we mentioned the playoffs, but let's not get a chance not to talk about probably the one of my favourite goals ever at Hampden.
The thing is, and And yes, I suppose in recent times we have got very, very fond memories of victories over Rangers, but it is somewhat ridiculous as well that we sit here contemplating that if we don't win the game on Sunday, we potentially go 18 years without beating Rangers in an official league fixture, which is quite a staggering record. You're playing them at least three times a season. We must be going almost 50 games without beating Rangers in the league.
It's madness, isn't it? It's really crazy. That's when you see, when you put it down like that, it's absolutely mental that, when you think about it, I mean, the amount of times that we've beaten Celtic, although it's not been that many, but it's 18 years is a phenomenal amount of time not to beat a team that well, although they've been out of the league for a wee while, it's just crazy. I can't believe it's been as long as that.
It's one of these things that get leveled to the players. It's like it gets into your mindset. Once you've been beaten by them so many times, you're never going to beat them because you're always going into the game expecting you're going to be beaten. But how many different players must have pulled on a Motherwell jersey over the course of those you know 18 odd years or whatever it is in games at Fir Park? So you're talking players that's probably retired 10, 15, 20 years or whatever almost. You know, that'd be a bit far-fetched there, but you know the amount of players that I love, it can't all just be down to you know the mindset you're getting into these games that you're beating before it kicks off. But sooner or later it's going to turn. Let's hope it's Sunday.
Yeah, I'm just thinking there as well. Aki's have beaten them twice at Ibrox in recent years. It would not inconceivable that Aki's, in terms of the amounts of points accumulated, they can't be far off as, and they've not been in the league half the years that we're referring to, so that's quite a frightening fact. That they what I want to know as well, Ben, is how bevied did you get at your first birthday party when we beat them in 2002?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, the follow-on milk was flowing after that one. It was a really great time. I mean, I can remember absolutely zero of it, but from what I'm told, it was quite the occasion.
It certainly was. It was a good Christmas that year. Guys, I think that's about all we've got for this week. Thank you very much. A bit of an extended effort tonight.
No Thanks problem. Again. Always a pleasure.
Well, we can look ahead to a big week. Good luck to everybody involved at the club travelling to Israel for Thursday night's game. We'll be right behind you from home, and fingers crossed that we come back here next Monday talking about playoff and the dreams of the group stages. Go and do it, boys, and we'll be back next Monday. Thank you and goodbye.